Now, in my talk, I like to outline and focus on barriers and opportunities in our online program. To give you a brief idea, when I say program, it includes, in essence, different components from the undergraduate level at the Environmental Management and Agriculture and Natural Resources program, and graduate program that has a thesis and non-thesis component in environmental science, with current enrollment of about 70 enrolled full-time students. And also recently added over the past 2 years graduate certificate programs in three different areas. One of them is focused on wetlands and water resource management. Now, when we talk about education, we have to look at the values of learning, because it is important to target what the intent is. First, to develop understanding and personal meaning, but also to develop competency through mastery of skills. And Mike gave a really good example, mastering the skills, for example, of mapping out hydric soils indicators. Develop learners' ability to articulate and share their knowledge. And this is probably something that relates to higher order learning skills, as well as the last bullet, to enable learners to transfer learning from one context to another in authentic life situations. In essence, what's learned in a course or in a training session, to apply these skills also to many other cases and to the real world. Now, this complexity of learning is truly happening at very different levels. And of course, these levels can be built into different courses, undergraduate or graduate courses or certificate courses, including levels from lower order skills, remember, understand and apply, but also some of the higher order skills to analyze, synthesize, evaluate and create. However, these skills are really only really targeted if we build them into our classes. For example, the lower order skills, we can use textbook material, lectures that are passively delivered to our students, in particular in online mode, quizzes that are set up also in course management systems or assignments. But if we really target the higher order learning skills, then of course we have to be more creative in building in these components into our courses, in particular also graduate level courses, like labs, motivational imprints, for example, images or highlights out of the news that truly students also remember and relate to the material that they are exposed to in our classes. Critical discussion or guided question-answer sessions, as well as projects. And projects are probably the most intriguing here to trigger also higher-order skills, because they are quite flexible and challenge students also to actively engage in the learning process. Now, in the online setting, we use our course management systems deliver our tools asynchronous, but also synchronous. You see here the different components, ranging from very simple text-based material to quite high-end video and interactive materials. On the interactive side, or the synchronous side, the live side, we utilize chats, virtual labs, virtual offices, and lots of social media that are built into a variety of classes, not all classes at the same level. But in particular, the synchronous side targets really to create a dialogue between faculty and learner, and the learner and learner, for example, in breakout sessions and chats, forming study groups so that students can cluster together and work, for example, jointly on a case study. Now, on the asynchronous side, we emphasize mainly the interaction between learner and resource. And that's quite important, because if these two different components are not in balance, usually there is something also lacking. Now, in terms of styles, of course, there are many, many different ways how we can teach, in particular also in online mode. And one important statement that you might have seen around is, tell me and I forget, show me and I remember, involve me and I understand. So actively engaging students in the learning process possibly creates deeper learning experience, and also long-term learning experiences, things that students remember even years later. So this inquiry-based learning is a concept that is focused to not seeking the is not so much focused on seeking the right answer, because often there is not a clear answer. There is not only one answer, but there might be multiple paths to get to possible answers. So it is rather seeking appropriate resolutions to questions and issues. And this might be, for example, a restoration project where students also jointly work together to come to some methodology that is worked out to find possible solutions how to restore in wetland. It's one example. Now, for educators, inquiry implies emphasis on the development of these inquiry skills and the nurturing of inquiring attitudes and habits of mind that will enable individuals to continue also later on to use their knowledge and hopefully also extend it. But to implement it, it's really important to look at different ways. For example, how are these worlds organized? How do they change? How do they interrelate to provide a context in which, for example, these projects can be implemented? And of course, also quite important, how do we communicate about, within, and across these different worlds? For example, in the wetland context, a few examples, from the lowest level, confirmation inquiry, if we simply reiterate, for example, what we provided to students in lecture-based material, for example, to learn about wetland delineation, study how and lecture how to do it, where quizzes are implemented and students, in essence, provide hopefully the right answers. Structures inquiry goes a little bit further, as well as guided inquiry, because here also students are more or less challenged to, in essence, also formulate out their own questions surrounding, focused on a specific topic, and even develop their own methodology to find a solution to a problem, for example, in a restoration project. Open inquiry are really very open, that not even the instructor might know the right answer, where, in essence, more or less discussion on a specific topic hopefully leads to more clarity. Now, this is all very nice, and nice conceptual framework, but how do we really empower the learners? And our approach in our program is focused on a system where I also handed out to you some small business cards that that's our business model. It's quite different. To feature, in essence, an open learning system where, in essence, students are enabled to co-create material because we want to actively engage them in the learning process. The system provides shared learning content, and in essence, it's participatory because different students can team up with other students, with a faculty member, with an instructor or a colleague or friend, and develop learning material. So in essence, we are creating a collaborative learning setting where, in essence, students can come together to create reusable learning objects. And these RLOs are independent and self-standing units of learning content predisposed to reuse, even in multiple contexts, so that we can integrate them, for example, in certificate programs, in graduate courses, deploy them out, or, for example, to use them in various contexts and settings. Now, these reusable learning objects, they are digital, they are web-based, and in that sense also support online programs, but they can be utilized also in the classroom. They are reusable because we can use them multiple times for multiple courses, even adapt them. They are self-contained, very specific on a specific objective. They are relatively small in size, usually shorter than 15 minutes, standardized, and I will show you a few examples in a minute. They are searchable because they are hosted at a website that gives you access to browse through it and find really the learning material that you're looking for. They are flexible, easy to update. They can be aggregated, in essence, stacked up to build larger course units or modules. They are suited, in essence, for a new type of learner that is also more learner-centered than instructor-centered, where the instructor really provides the learning material to students, but really encourages also students to actively engage in this process. And of course, they're cost effective. After once created, they can be shared and used multiple times. So the key concepts of this eco-learned open educational system that hosts reusable learning objects is that it's a system where we can share learning content. It contains peer-reviewed published RLOs, very similar to research publications, where in essence the learning material is looked at by experts before they are released to the general public. In this system, there are also authoring tools provided that support really the smooth generation of these RLOs that make it actually easy to upload material and on the fly create them. So in the spirit of Web 2.0, it empowers also learner because a student can actively engage in this process actually creating learning material. And of course, everybody, experts, extension agents, instructors or researchers can get involved to utilize this system and feed in material, but also to draw out material to support their classes. So these reusable learning objects, here's a snapshot of the website, is quite intriguing because it provides, in essence, you with different roles. You can become an author, you can become an instructor that uses material, or you are a learner. Simply go there and see what's in there and find the topic you're interested in. And I will share with you also a few examples that come from the focal areas of environmental sciences, soil, water, climate, and more, wetland sciences, agriculture, and life sciences. Particularly in wetland sciences, we have created a huge number of wetland-focused reusable learning objects that could be also utilized in maybe some of your classes. To give you an idea how these RLOs really look like, here's a snapshot. I cannot go to the live website, but it's live if you utilize the URL and test it out. For example, this RLO has a title and author, David Mankin. He is actually a student that is in our graduate program. He developed this reusable learning object. It has a number. It has a specific learning objective. It's ranked in terms of how difficult this material is. So this material targets more or less the undergraduate level. But in essence, you can stack up these different components that make a reusable learning object. For example, upload an image or a presentation and document, and it's compiled on the fly in this wrapper that in essence provide the visual overview of this RLO. Now I'm clicking now through an RLO that was developed also by a student on wetland ecosystems. This one is made up of different components. For example, I'm now in the instructional component where the learning material is provided piece by piece. You see here an overview, but this material can include graphics, text, videos. It usually includes audio component where the author also attached an audio recording to the RLO and can be quite engaging because it's very focused usually on a topic. The assessment component is also included in each of the RLOs. These are a few questions that are directly focused on the learning content of this RLO. Then a short description of the author and the references also used to create the learning material. Now, if students get involved in creating these RLOs, they have to really understand what they are presenting because otherwise it would not even pass peer review. To give you a snapshot of several other wetland-related RLOs that were generated and are available in open educational format for all of you after you log into EcoLearned. In essence, you could take one of the RLOs and also take the URL and include it in your PowerPoint slideshow or in your learning material or in your courses. Even plug them into your course management system that you use at your institution. So it's an open system. And I think this is also the beauty of it, because after generating also various resources, of course, this material is available and published in the system. Now, as you can see here, we have several hundred RLOs that were built up. We have currently close to actually 470 users that are utilizing also EcoLearnIt. So it's not only an institutional system, but this is a system that can be really widely used across different institutions. You can search for keywords, for example, wetland, and then all the different wetland RLO-related learning material pops up. Likewise, hydrology, water sustainability, and other topics can be searched for as well. Now, on these RLOs, I teach a course that focuses on the pedagogy and the technical components of developing reusable learning objects. It's a one-credit course. It's relatively short. It lasts one semester. But the task in this course for students is to develop one individual RLO and one jointly with other co-authors. So they go through the whole process. They learn a little bit about learning theory, learning background, how to, for example, formulate effective learning objectives, how to present material that it can be understood. And students peer review each other's material. So we also cross-cut the peer review process so that they also learn what to watch out for, what works and what is not so appealing, and also critique, in essence, RLOs that are produced as part of this course. So this has worked very well, that RLOs are used not only at the UF, but also at other institutions. And other authors have provided also material. This is one provided by Ian Pepper on Within the World of Soils. It includes a video clip that is also quite appealing as one other example. Now, but to come back to the concept of inquiry-based learning, of course, these RLOs are in essence static because they contain learning content on a very specific topic. But we can stack them up to build larger courses. Now, to really create an inquiry-based learning setting, the instructor can also complement the RLOs in the classroom, for example, by critical discussion. So this is, in essence, another component how we can utilize also RLOs in a course setting. With that, I'd like to thank you for your attention. And if you have any questions, please. That's true. Now, I must say EcoLearnIt is kind of a pet project. In essence, I'm not making any money out of it. But I think it serves an important purpose because, in essence, it complements a lot of our online activities, not only to teach the course on RLOs, but also students are utilizing the resources because I've also developed multiple RLOs on GIS, on geographic information systems, as well as my colleague, Dr. Hochmeier. And we are utilizing these RLOs and complementing them with other inquiry-based learning material quite well in our courses. So in essence, it can make a course attractive. It can save instructor time to put material together, and we like to be also the system used really across institutions, even internationally, because there is no boundary in terms of excluding any users. It's an open educational system, and I think that has a very different appeal than making money, charging tuition in a very closed setting, so it's actually quite opposing. Yeah, Marty. Yeah, it's the cream on top of things, I think, that I do in terms of teaching. It's not rewarded in any way, except for I think it's well received that you do things in addition. And here I see my role rather as serving really the community of educators, because we had a little project, capacity building project, that was funded initially, that provided the seed to get us kickstarted, and now we are maintaining it in essence and trying to also populate the system to build up learning content to feed in more and more material. But the idea is truly, well, maybe I am altruistic in that sense, that I'm volunteering my time to also serve as the editor of the system. But I like to really encourage everybody to get involved, because I think we can benefit too. And I'm benefiting too, because I'm drawing material actually out of the EcoLearned system for my courses that I teach. But I say, compared to a traditional graduate course that is tuition-based, usually password-protected, here the idea is truly to be more open, to create really a system that can be used beyond the courses that you teach. And this might draw additional attention to your program. It has definitely positive side effects that you also build in reputation for being involved and engaged in education. But important is also, I think, what is most gratifying to see is when I teach the RLO course, how students really go about it. They have very, very good technical skills, sometimes even better than instructors. That an audio recording to produce a video clip, it seems to be no problem. That they come up with really high-end material. And I'm usually impressed in terms of how they pass through these technical hurdles that maybe some of the instructors or colleagues of mine are really whining about. And that's one important component. But I think also that students have really fun, because in a survey that we also conducted, where we interviewed also students, how do you like it? Is this something that you like to do? And it was very well received, because usually when students are put in the situation that they can produce material and are taken serious, because this is published educational material, that they even can post on their CV, they feel empowered, I believe. And that's also the feedback that we receive from students, because it's their product. Their author name is up there. And as you've seen, I mentioned that various students were authors of these RLOs. They can actually produce quite good material. Of course, instructors too. But we can also utilize, I think, students to really get involved, because usually when they develop material, they really have to go through this thinking process. What do I like to teach? What do I need to put together to make this a learning unit? The same process as an instructor does, but it switches, in essence, roles. And I think this is quite important for students to see too, switching into the, in essence, teacher or instructor role. They appreciate it. I don't know, Rupesh. Right. Actually, this is a very good idea. I've never thought about it. We need to register the website within service that also brings your URL higher up in the listing of search engines like Google or Yahoo. That's a good point. I will do that, definitely. Thank you.